How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been watching and reading and doing. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's get right into it here. The what we've been reading section, I finally finished a book that I've been alluding to in various episodes of the podcast called Hollywood, The Oral History. This book is pretty extraordinary. So in 1969, the American Film Institute started this series of seminars between Hollywood professionals and students who were studying at AFI. And they ultimately built up this archive of like 3,000 guest speakers and almost 10,000 hours of conversations. And the authors of this book, Janine Basinger and Sam Wasson, were granted full access to that archive and combed through it to present the oral history of Hollywood from the very beginning of the industry to the silent film era to the transition to sound and the end of the studio system and New Hollywood and how Asians gained power in the 80s and all of that. And the cool thing about this book is it has quotes directly from the people who are actually there. So I would say that I happened to read this book at a pretty good time in my personal movie watching journey, because over the past decade or so, I've made it a point to try to incorporate older movies into my viewing habits. And what that means is I actually know who a lot of the people are who are talking in the first half of this book, like James Wong Howe and Ken Adam and George Cukor and people like that who might not be household names to modern movie fans, but like knowing those names actually enhanced my enjoyment of this book, as did a lifetime of consuming interviews with dozens of the people listed here, like Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, Katharine Hepburn, William Friedkin, Peter Bogdanovich. Like, having watched all these video interviews with these people over the years, you can basically hear these interviews in their voices. They have such distinctive voices. So it's a really fun way to go through Hollywood history and just be told this whole grand story from beginning to end. So I have a few quibbles with the book. Like, some chapters feel pretty long and repetitive, and I'd probably have trimmed some of the observations out. But overall, I found this to be a really, really excellent resource and a very enjoyable read. So it's called Hollywood, The Oral History. I would recommend it really to anybody who loves movies, because there's just so many cool stories in there. But all right, Brad, let's get into what we've been watching. What have you been watching recently?
Well, I'm going to begin with a rewatch. And this is something I decided to rewatch because I hadn't seen it since it came out in theaters. And when it came out in theaters, I didn't really like it very much. But film Twitter, as we call it, just loves this fucking movie. And that's Michael Mann's Miami Vice. And I gotta admit, I don't get it. I think this movie is just okay. I feel like I understand what Mann tries to do with movies like this. Because like he brings a sense of realism and a much less heightened approach to an action movie, especially something like Miami Vice, which easily could have been something like Bad Boys, or a big action movie with some quips here and there and allusions to the original series and whatnot. But he keeps it pretty grounded and realistic, not unlike Heat, and that's fine to an extent. But it means the movie just isn't that exciting to me. I think Colin Farrell is very good in the movie, but I don't think that they develop the dynamic between Crockett and Tubbs as partners well enough to like really be worthy of like what Miami Vice is and should be. And I just come away appreciating the shootout at the end, because it hits just as hard as the shootouts in Heat. But I come away being kind of mystified that people are just so over the moon for Miami Vice, when Michael Mann has done so many better movies and there are so many other better action movies out there. How do you feel about Miami Vice, Ben?
I've actually never seen this. I think I watched the first 5 minutes one time where it was like the movie was on HBO or something, but I had to leave to go to work or something like that. And I just never got back around to actually finishing it. But I've seen similar things, that this is like a very divisive movie. It does seem like a ton of people love it, like just for the vibes. I think that's the word that's mostly, that's most associated with this movie. Like people just refer to this as like the ultimate vibes movie. Yeah, it sounds like it left you wanting a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like it's not that it's poorly made or anything like that. I just don't get the love for it. You know, it's just,
okay.
It just kind of baffles me.
Well, I'll try to check this out and maybe weigh in. Maybe we can have a deeper conversation about that. When did that movie come out? You said
2006, I think.
Six. Okay. All right. For some reason, I thought it was a 2005 movie, and I was like, oh, maybe next year we could do like a big 20th anniversary chat. But that's 2 years away, Brad. Who knows where we're going to be in 2 years now? So
probably dead.
Probably dead. Okay. What else have you been watching?
I also I watched for the first time a Philip Seymour Hoffman movie that I had been meaning to watch for a while, and that's Owning Mahoney.
I've never even heard of this. What is this?
Yeah, so this is a Sony Pictures Classics movie, so it's kind of under the radar. I wasn't really familiar with the filmmaker. It's directed by a guy named Richard Kwintniowski, something like that. Anyway, this seems like to be like the biggest thing that he's done. But it's basically a drama based on a true story about what is dubbed basically the biggest one-man heist in Canadian history. And Philip Seymour Hoffman plays this guy named Dan Mahoney. He works at a bank that takes care of some pretty big accounts, you know, that have, you know, millions of dollars invested and whatnot. And he's also a gambling addict. And he gets in debt, and in order to keep fueling his gambling desires, he starts fraudulently drawing money out of the accounts of a couple different clients. And we're talking like hundreds of thousands of dollars in like a single trip to the casino. And Minnie Driver plays his wife, who it's kind of a thankless role where she's just kind of like, oh geez, you know, I don't really know what to do here. I'm a sad woman. John Hurt plays the casino boss, who is like really hellbent on just making sure that Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is always just bled dry every time he comes to the casino. You've got character actor Maury Chaykin playing the guy who is like supposed to be collecting from him whenever he, you know, makes bets that don't pay off and whatnot. And it's a relatively slow burn, and it doesn't necessarily do anything that you don't expect when it comes to like a drama about somebody who's addicted to gambling. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is he's so fascinating to watch, and I could watch him in anything. So it's a solid movie. I didn't walk away loving it or anything like that, but you know, I'm glad that I saw it to continue my eventual completion of watching all of Philip Seymour Hoffman stuff.
Yeah, do you remember where this was, a streaming, or did you like rent it on DVD somewhere, or how'd you find this?
If I remember correctly, I think that it's on Hoopla. No, it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime, Owning Mahoney is the name of the movie. So check that out if that sounds interesting to you. What else have you been watching, Brad?
I also watch Freaked. This is a movie from 1993 that is co-directed by Alex Winter of Bill and Ted fame. Tom Stern is the other director. And this was a Fox movie that has kind of fallen by the wayside. It's basically a dark comedy with like some tinges of horror, and it has a lot of really cool and gnarly practical makeup and puppet effects. And so the premise is Alex Winter plays this douchey former child star, and he's appearing on this talk show with Brooke Shields playing the talk show host, and he's recounting his life story as it involves this like toxic chemical that is in some of these like makeup things that he's been promoting. And there's a lot of protests because apparently it's been damaging to people. And so it's just kind of this like big weird misadventure where he ends up finding a group of like circus freaks, basically run by Randy Quaid. And he discovers that that he's been creating them by using this chemical that he's been hawking in all of these makeup things. And so Randy Quaid turns him and a couple of his friends into like strange creations. Alex Winter's like half of his body gets like completely deformed, like turned into this like scaly monster, like a almost like a gnarly version of a human sized gremlin. And then his two friends, a guy and a girl who don't get along, get fused together as one person. it's a very zany, weird, like dark comedy that's just so strange. It has an uncredited role by Keanu Reeves as a dog boy, and it has a lot of like just surprising appearances by people. Like I said, Randy Quaid's in it, William Sadler's in it, Mr. T is in it, Bobcat Goldthwait, John Hawks has a very bit part that seems like it got cut down because he's credited as cowboy, but he doesn't have like a super big part. Even John M. Chu has a role inside of a giant like puppet monster. It's
weird.
Yeah, this was a wild thing. And so I stumbled upon this with a couple friends of mine because they subscribe to that obscure streaming service called Eternal Memory or Eternal Family, something like that. Eternal Family, which is a streaming service that's dedicated to housing media that's kind of like deemed obscure or lost, where they're not sure where the rights belong, or if they know the rights belong to somebody, they get permission from them to have it on their streaming service. And if they don't know who the rights belong to, then they provide it for free, basically. And they had pushed it on their Twitter, and we thought it was available on their thing, but it wasn't there. But thankfully, we found out that even though it's not easily available to stream anywhere, it's available in HD on YouTube, which is where we watched it. So yeah, it was a weird, wild experience watching this movie, but we had a good time. It's just such a strange piece of cinema.
So I had never heard of this until October of last year when I edited an article on Slash Film called Freaked at 30, a look back at Alex Winter and Tom Stern's cult classic comedy. And this is like a very, very in-depth article.
I must have missed this. I'm going to have to go read this now.
Yeah, it's like incredibly well researched, and it just like incorporates a ton of interviews that the folks have done over the years about this movie, and gets into a lot of the backstory and like some of the studio politics and stuff that were going on at the time when the movie was greenlit and everything. And I had never heard of this before. And reading some of the stuff that happens in this movie, in this piece, I was like, what on God's green earth is going on? Like, how the hell did anybody ever give a bunch of people money to make this as a movie? And it just sounds totally bonkers. So I had it on my list of things to check out, but it's been a little while and I still have not been able to actually cross it off my list. But hearing that it's available on YouTube, that makes it easier for me. And I don't know, maybe I'll save it until this October now, because it certainly sounds like it's maybe odd enough to be sort of in that Halloween rotation or something. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, interesting choice, Brad. This seems like a weird movie for people to just stumble across, but at the same time, like from what I know about the movie, that kind of feels like the only way anybody's going to watch it these days is stumbling across this movie, because it's not really in the major conversation. So excellent. Okay, so the movie's called Freaked, and I'll link to that piece if anybody who's seen the movie already wants to dive into the making of it and all that stuff. You can check that out in the show notes. All right, what else have you been watching?
I also watched Albert Brooks's Mother a while back. I don't know if I brought this up on here or not, but I was trying to make my way through Albert Brooks's filmography, since it's not particularly daunting. And I like Albert Brooks as a filmmaker and a writer and a comedian, just generally as a performer. And there were still a couple more that I hadn't watched yet. And so I decided to check more of them off. And that's Mother, a movie where he plays an author who's trying to come to terms with the relationship that he has with his mother, who played by Debbie Reynolds, and is, as you might expect, very kind of critical of him and like gives him a hard time. And, you know, he's going through a divorce. And so he's dealing with a lot. And so he decides to do this like kind of experiment that he hopes will like help with his writing and help him sort through some shit, where he moves back in with his mom into their old house. And like, he goes in and even like sets up his old room with all of his old stuff in it from when he was a teenager. And it's very much what you would expect from Albert Brooks, just great dry line delivery and like chastising of like the weird things that his mom does at her age, and just like the kind of confrontational comedy that comes from being an adult and dealing with the idiosyncrasies that your mother has as she gets older. He had so many great lines that just make me laugh. He just has this incredible wry delivery of stuff that you just can't help but enjoy thoroughly. So the only other one I have left now is Modern Romance, which I understand is very good. So I'll be checking that out pretty soon. But yeah, if you haven't seen Mother, it's fantastic, and it's available on Hoopla.
Awesome. Okay. Albert Brooks's Mother. You've also been catching up with the show that Jacob loves, Evil, right?
Yeah. This has been really fun to watch. It is basically like a horror procedural. It's like House meets X-Files with like, I guess, a little bit of maybe like Evil Dead thrown in there. If you haven't heard of Evil, yeah, it follows a trio of people who are basically investigators for the church who look into instances where people suspect there might be some kind of demonic possession or unexplained paranormal phenomenon tied to religious iconography or experiences and things like that. It's got a little bit of dark comedy to it. It does some really surprisingly like twisted, sinister things for a show that started on network TV and then eventually shifted to Paramount Plus. There's definitely a big change in like how edgy and more mature it gets when in season two, where they clearly had the shift from network TV. But even that first season, like there's some gnarly stuff that they get into. Michael Emerson is in it, and he of course is a great villain. He's just so delightfully sinister, and he just like soaks every word he says with just this vicious venom. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm in the middle of season two right now, and I know they're about to finish the fourth and final season. But yeah, it's been really great to watch. So if you like that kind of like horror tinge stuff, then like you should definitely check it out on Paramount Plus.
Very cool. Yeah. And if you're just joining this podcast, Jacob interviewed the showrunners for the start of, I don't remember if it was season three or season four, the start of season four, just, you know, a few weeks ago, basically. So go back and check that out. You've also been rewatching Detroiters, Brad.
Yeah, it's been a while since I'd seen it, and I loved it the first time it was around. I watched it as it aired when it unfortunately only had just two seasons on Comedy Central. And since Tim Robinson has kind of like risen to new levels of appreciation because of I Think You Should Leave on Netflix, I wanted to go back and revisit this, especially since the show pairs him with Sam Richardson, who's also hilarious on I Think You Should Leave. And it's just hilarious and awesome in general. I've been digging back into the show, and I wish so much. And I even said this during my interview with him for Sausage Party Foodtopia, that I wish that we got more of the show, because they're just such a great team together, and it's this fantastic blend of like Mad Men meets 30 Rock, in a contemporary setting, and having them together, it's just so funny. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's awesome. I finally got a chance to check the show out earlier this year for the first time, and was just cracking up the whole time. It's so well done, and I fully agree that it definitely deserved more than two seasons. So I don't know, maybe they'll like, this seems like one of those things that like maybe 5 years from now, the two of them could get back together and like revisit those characters and check back in with them and see where they are at different points in their lives and stuff like that. So I hope that happens.
It's almost like there's some kind of benefit to shows being re-aired on television at various points so that people can rediscover them, as opposed to just letting them suffer and die in a streaming library somewhere where no one's ever going to stumble upon them.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, what's the last thing you've been watching recently?
And so the other thing that I'm working through right now is I am watching every single SNL digital short. And it's for a number of different reasons. One of them is just because I am a diehard SNL fan, and I think that there are some SNL digital shorts that I actually haven't seen. Another is that the Lonely Island and Seth Meyers podcast started back in April, and I've been listening to that very, very closely as it's gone on, because the Lonely Island trio of Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaffer, and Yorma Taconi are sitting down with Seth Meyers to break down each SNL digital short that they worked on. And because Seth Meyers is also involved, and he was a head writer during the time that Lonely Island rose to fame, and we're doing SNL Digital Shorts, he has this incredible level of insight over the making of the show, and also doesn't hesitate to offer his like honest perspective and criticism of like what was happening at the time, whether he thinks like the shorts still work or even worked at the time, and also digs into different behind the scenes tidbits, including sketches that never aired, made it to Dress but got cut before the live show. They even do some like readings of certain scripts that like didn't move forward as sketches. And they get people like Will Forte and Bill Hader to chime in about various SNL digital shorts and their involvement in them. It's just a treasure trove for Saturday Night Live fans. And so that has inspired me and my cohorts at the 10 to 1 podcast, which is my own Saturday Night Live podcast, to watch every single SNL digital short and come up with a ranking top 10 for them.
Wow.
Yeah, we're each coming up with our own top 10. And since it's a little difficult to do like a combined top 10 when you only have three people, we're not sure if the math's going to make it easy for that to work out and be a viable thing. But at the very least, we're all getting together. We're watching every short, and then we're kind of like we're ranking them as we go along, since they're fresh in our mind and figuring all that out. So we just recently recorded and released our first episode after watching the first 35 digital shorts, which covered a couple seasons of Saturday Night Live, and it's been really fun to take a look back, especially having some of the insights about the first couple dozen shorts that they've covered so far on the SNL podcast with Seth Meyers and the Lonely Island. So yeah, it's quite an undertaking, especially since there are roughly like a dozen, maybe a little more, that aren't officially available online for various reasons, typically music rights. But thankfully, two resources have proven to be very helpful in this arena, and that's TikTok and this Asian website called Bilibili. Where I have any sketch that I can't find like on YouTube officially is available at one of those two sources to watch, which has been super helpful.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember you wrote about the Seth Meyers Lonely Island podcast when that's first started or when you first discovered it. And you basically provided a public service announcement directly to me. And so I subscribed to that show and I've been slowly catching up with it. And it is very enjoyable, even for me, who's only like a mid Saturday Night Live fan. So it's a very funny show, and they link to a lot of the stuff in their show notes. So you can just like watch the SNL digital shorts that they're talking about in that episode really easily without having to do like the full Brad deep dive kind of thing. Yeah. So,
and I'm super jealous too, because they obviously have access to the massive database of like what is available on SNL's servers, where they have scripts for all of the sketches, clips from all of the dress rehearsals and all that stuff. I'm just like, oh my God, just please give me access to that. All I want is access to that folder.
Yeah, for sure.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
Home Club for details.
Okay, so I have three things I wanted to talk about. One of them, which I watched for the first time, is called All That Jazz. Have you ever seen this movie, the Bob Fosse movie?
I actually haven't.
Yeah, I'd never seen it either, and it was streaming on Tubi a couple weeks ago. It's not there anymore, and as far as I know, it's not streaming anywhere anymore right now.
So would you say it's not to be?
I would say it is not to be, yes. But this is an incredible examination of the mentality and the psychology of Bob Fosse, this really, really famous choreographer, director, I mean, just like an all-around creative person. It looks at his self-doubt and his he was like this big workaholic and his sex addiction and his thoughts about death. And this movie is just like not what I thought it was at all. And it's really incredible. Roy Scheider, who stars in Jaws, plays essentially Bob Fosse. I mean, it's a Bob Fosse stand-in, but it's basically him. And so this is just like one of the most interesting sort of psychological examinations of oneself on screen that I think a director has ever done. It's just a really, really fascinating movie where you're almost like mesmerized. Like, I can't believe this guy is putting his own story on blast like this for the entire world to consume. But it's a really incredible movie. There's this exceptionally theatrical and stylish mind palace set that the character goes into, which gives the audience direct access into the Roy Scheider character's thoughts, which is just a really cool visual way to let us into that character's mindset and show us like the true sort of depths of his lack of emotionality. And sort of like he really just sort of values the creative process above all relationships in his life. And you can tell that like the actual Bob Fosse is being incredibly hypercritical of his own life and his own choices when he's making these movies or this movie, but he is just like, this is who I am, basically. He's just sort of like vomiting all the stuff up on the screen. But there's these amazing dance sequences and choreography, and the first like opening few minutes of this movie are unreal. There's like this big tryout sequence for like a big Broadway show, and it's just yeah, like hypnotic to watch. So I would say it's definitely worth checking out if you can track it down. I feel like I've seen a lot of people say that this is one of the greatest movies of all time, and so I feel weird about only catching up with it now. And I don't know, it feels like a movie that I'm gonna have to sit with for a while before I could like weigh in about whether or not I feel like it deserves that placement or whatever. But the film's called All That Jazz. So is it on your list of things to see, Brad, or is it like not really in your interest set, or what do you think?
No, for sure. I mean, if only because of like its place in cinema history and the acclaim it's been given over the years, like, yeah, I definitely would like to watch it at a time or watch it sometime. So I would like to get around to it.
Okay, so another movie I saw recently is called Mountain Queen, The Summits of Lhakpa Sherpa. And this is a documentary directed by a woman named Lucy Walker. And it tells the story of a woman named Lhakpa Sherpa, who is the first Nepali woman to survive climbing Mount Everest. And the film is about her relationship with her husband and her kids and how she is torn between wanting to be with her kids, but also desperately yearning to get back to the top of the mountain. And I think anybody who pursues any sort of creative endeavor in their lives can probably relate to some of the feeling that is on display here, like finding a balance between the responsibilities of life and the high that can come when you feel like you're in the zone and doing the thing that you think you're meant to be doing in this life. I thought overall that this was like a very touching, inspiring movie about this woman's incredible record-breaking achievements on the tallest mountain in the world. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, Mountain Queen, The Summits of Lhakpa Sherpa is streaming on Netflix right now, so you can check that out there. And then finally, I caught up with a movie from 1949 directed by Howard Hawks called I Was a Male War Bride. And it is, Brad, I'm guessing you haven't seen this one.
No, I don't think I've even heard of it.
I hadn't either, really, but I'm trying to go through a lot of the Cary Grant movies because I just love Cary Grant so much. And I had never heard of this, but it's set in Germany after World War II. And Cary Grant plays a French army officer, which is hilarious because he does not have any French accent. He just sounds like Cary Grant always sounds, which is like very British or whatever, mid-Atlantic, I guess. But his character has this begrudging working relationship with this American lieutenant who is played by an actress named Anne Sheridan. And the two of them are forced to work together on Grant's last mission before he retires from the French army. And eventually these two fall in love and they get married. But before they can spend the night together as husband and wife, Anne Sheridan's character finds out that she's about to be shipped back to the United States. And it turns out the only way that Grant can get a travel visa is through something called the War Brides Act, which is the real thing. And it has these provisions in place for the spouses of American soldiers. And as you can imagine, that causes a whole lot of confusion because Cary Grant is the quote unquote bride in this scenario because he's married to an American soldier. And there are a bunch of zany situations and wild misunderstandings and stuff that arise from that scenario. So I think the best thing about this movie is the chemistry between Grant and Sheridan. It seems like sometimes in movies from this period, the women are just kind of there on the sidelines going like, oh, you, to the male lead, you know, like that, that kind of thing. But this felt like a genuine two-hander, which is always nice to see. So I Was a Male War Bride, pretty funny stuff, really good Cary Grant performance. And Howard Hawks, man, he was a real one. He was just out there cranking out movies, like true studio system stuff. I mean, the book that I mentioned at the beginning of this episode has a bunch of Howard Hawks anecdotes in it. And yeah, this dude was just like directing tons of stuff. I mean, he directed Scarface and Bringing Up Baby and His Girl Friday and The Big Sleep and Rio Bravo. I mean, he was just like out there turning them out, directing a ton of stuff. So anyway, the movie is called I Was a Male War Bride. And I always think when I think about the movie or speak it out loud, I always do it in like the Pumbaa voice from The Lion King, like when I was a young warthog. So anyway, just a weird thing. But what have you been eating recently, Brad?
Yeah, for those who maybe happen to not know, you know, if you've only recently joined the podcast and it's been a while since I've done this, I run my own Instagram account called Brad's Junk, where I post about new food and snacks and soft drinks and fast food and whatnot. And that's at Look at Brad's Junk on Instagram. And here are some of the things I've tried recently. There is a new Coffee Mate creamer that is Kit Kat flavored, the candy bar, the famous wafer chocolate covered candy bar. And it's quite good, actually. I really like it. It's definitely more chocolate forward. There's like a little bit of a hint of the wafer flavor in there, but it's more, it's definitely, almost like chocolate milkshake, I guess, forward, you could say, especially when it's mixed in coffee. But, I like it with my morning coffee. I've been having it with iced coffee, which I usually do during the summer, and then when it gets colder, I switch back over to warm coffee. So it's pretty good, and it should be in most grocery stores now. I found it at a Meijer nearby, but it should be at like Walmart and whatnot.
Okay, excellent. What else?
Even though summer's not over, fall flavors are already starting to hit shelves. Even some Christmas holiday flavors are already starting to hit. Seasons just don't matter anymore. And so one of the new things that is out is Werther's Original has a caramel apple hard candy. Initially, I didn't realize this was new, but then I looked back and Werther's Originals, they've done apple-filled hard caramels, and then they've done soft caramels that have had like apple flavored filling in them as well. But this is the first time they've had a caramel apple hard candy basically swirl. And it's really, really good. It has the same flavor of like those caramel apple suckers you can get. But it has a much better blend of the caramel and apple as opposed to the sucker having a lot of like the caramel on the outside of it. So they're really good. I found mine at Dollar General. They should be popping up at other stores as fall candy starts to hit shelves, as well. So keep an eye out for them because they're very good.
Okay. And what else?
I also tried Spilt caffeinated milk. That's SPYLT. This was a company that I recently found out about, and, they sent me a sample box of their different flavors to try out. And this is basically like Yoo-hoo in a can with a lot of caffeine in it. They have a chocolate milk flavor. They have a strawberry flavor. They have basically like a super caffeinated chocolate milk version. And they have like a vanilla milkshake flavor. And they're all very good. If you like Yoo-hoo, especially Yoo-hoo in a can, you'll definitely enjoy this. And, you know, like an energy drink, it has a pretty solid boost of caffeine in it as well. So there, it's a little on the pricier side, but I haven't seen this in stores very much, so you might just have to get it from the website or maybe Amazon or something. But I enjoyed it quite a bit, so if you might be in the market for something like that, recommend giving it a try.
Okay, so that's Spilt caffeinated milk. And what else?
So there's this company called Fit Butters that have different flavored cashew butters, almond butters, what have you. And they recently just came out with two Pebbles cereal flavored Fit Butters. It's an official collaboration with Post, both Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles. And it's cashew butter that is both packed with actual cereal pieces from both cereals. And also the cashew butter itself is also flavored like each cereal. And so it's basically, if you put it like on bread or something like that, it's like spreading like a crunchy peanut butter with chunks of peanut in it, but it's actually just chunks of Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles. And I was actually shocked to see just how much cereal like they put in a jar with Fit Butters. Like, you really have to like stir it around to get it all properly mixed in there. That's how much cereal was in there. And the flavors are good. I think that the Cocoa Pebbles one works a little bit better because it's paired with a cashew butter, which, you know, feels like a nice chocolate peanut butter sort of mix. But the Fruity Pebbles one isn't bad either. It's the Fruity Pebbles flavor is I don't want to say subtle because it's definitely like there, but it doesn't necessarily outshine the cashew butter flavor as much as you might think or maybe even want. But it's still pretty good. One thing I haven't done yet that I want to do is kind of like use them to make like a Fruity Pebbles peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or like make like a Fluffernutter with like marshmallow fluff and the Cocoa Pebbles cashew butter.
Okay. I was going to ask, like, what is the purpose of this? Like, beyond just spreading it on toast or something, like, what is the use case for this? And I guess that those would be options there. So
yeah, that's basically what, like, what I was thinking, but it does seem like otherwise it would be pretty limited unless you intend to, like, I don't know, cook with it.
Yeah, which is that's what I was thinking, because that's what I use butter for mostly, and I was just like, that would be just be so weird to just have like Fruity Pebbles pieces in a skillet or something when you're trying to.
We'll keep in mind that it's like a peanut butter, like it's not like butter, like, you know, that you're spreading on toast, like
to get
flavor. It's like if you were just the same way you would put peanut butter on toast, you know, like that's true.
Okay. All right, what else have you been eating?
The last thing I'll mention here is Twinkies from Hostess has a new mystery flavor. So if you're the kind of person who just likes to taste things and not know what they're supposed to taste like, this is for you.
Is that you, Brad?
It's me. I love a good mystery. So this is it's out on shelves now. If you haven't seen it yet, it should be popping up shortly. But they don't tell you what the flavor is. And it's the cream that has the different flavor. The Twinkie sponge cake itself is the same. But the cream in the middle is a new flavor. And I'm honestly terrible when it comes to discerning flavors when it's supposed to be a mystery. Like, unless it's very obvious, I have a difficult time with it. This one, though, I think, and I seem to be lining up with some other people who I've read, like, their reaction to it on Reddit and social media and whatnot, is it seems like it has a fairly prominent raspberry flavor. But there's also, like, something that's a little bit more, I don't know, I guess, like, tangy about it. So I'm thinking that maybe it might be, like, a raspberry lemonade kind of situation. But I'm not entirely sure. Some other people have said they thought it was pineapple, which I suppose could be a possibility, but I feel like I'm pretty attuned to pineapple because I do like it as a flavor so much. But yeah, it's definitely some kind of fruity flavor that feels like it's at least somewhat berry forward. So they've done strawberry before at some point, so I don't think it's that. And it's clearly different from like the typical artificial strawberry flavor. So raspberry feels like my best bet, but you'll have to wait to find out. I don't think they're going to say what it is until like sometime in October, because there's like a sweepstakes where like you can guess and like enter to win a prize and all that jazz.
Okay. I was wondering how they like finally reveal. Do they have like a grand presentation and they just like whip a giant curtain off of like a giant raspberry or something, and they're like, ta-da, this is what it was.
I hope so. That would be awesome.
All right, well, fun stuff there. Okay, well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about some of the stuff that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.